14. Nick Ferrari at breakfast from 7 on LBC. But right now, it's Steve Allen.
Thank you very much indeed. Coming up very shortly, the news at 4. And, yeah, I was in shock as well. Nearly 50 years and Dale dead. And I have to be brutally honest with you. I can't say I'm surprised. I know that sounds a really odd thing, but when I tell you the story, and I will be telling you the story after the news, you'll understand a little bit more about him. There were those people who worked with him and those people who knew him very well. And I knew him when he was 18 and 25 stone. And believe you me, he spent most of his life struggling with his weight. He spent most of his life struggling for attention. And he spent most of his life desperate to be famous. And he achieved that. The one thing he'd be thrilled about this morning is the coverage in the papers. I promise you, he'd be so excited. He'd be saying, do you think it'd be a good turnout, Steve? Do you think it'd be a good turnout? Yes, there will be. Yes, there will be.
On FM, online, on your mobile, and on digital radio. Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 4 o'clock, tributes are being paid to TV presenter Dale Winton, who's died aged 62. He became a household name through hosting a variety of game shows, including Supermarket Sweep. His agent says he died at home, but hasn't revealed any more details. Davina McCall says he was a warm, kind and generous soul with a touch of naughty. Entertainment journalist Caroline Frost has told LBC he had his own unique hosting style.
The knowing wink to the audience, almost taking the mickey out of the contestants, but very much laughing along with them, letting them be part of the joke. He went on to carry that same shtick into other shows equally successfully when he presented the National Lottery. I don't think there are many people who can get away with hosting something called Touch the Car, but Dale Winton was one of those people.
The Home Office says it's now reviewing 100... From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm John Stratford.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Steve Allen.
Morning, everybody. Nice to have you. I'm going to be a bit, just a little bit croaky this morning. Only a little bit. It's probably something to do with the weather and the fact that, I was as shocked as everybody else to hear the news that, that Dale had passed on. But strangely enough, we were only talking about it a while ago. He didn't like the ageing process. He hated it. He used to say to me, oh, I've had enough. And I used to say, oh, don't we? You've got loads of things. You know, just when you think somebody's got everything, deep down inside, maybe they don't have everything. So I go to bed last night, not thinking anything, as you generally do yesterday, and then wake up and friends of mine saying, don't, switch your phone off. And I've been inundated, absolutely, I promise you, inundated with texts and emails and all sorts of lovely people who I've not heard from for ages and ages, sort of saying very sorry. You know, everybody's very sorry. And I'm actually quite happy for him. I know that sounds bizarre and I should explain why. If occasionally I sound like I'm going to get a bit teary, well then you just have to kind of go with it this morning. It sounds so stupid, doesn't it? You know, when you've known somebody for such a long time, and I mean a long time, like nearly 50 years, and I was fine out in the newsroom. I was absolutely fine. And then all of a sudden, you know, you come into the studio and there's loads of texts and emails from people, sort of saying nice things about him. And I think that's great. And I feel better for him now because I don't think he'd been in a good place for a long, long time. I'll pull myself together, don't worry. I promise you it's not going to be like this, because I don't think he'd want it, but he would be so thrilled at the coverage. Yet the only thing he was worried about, he said at the funeral, we had this chat over, you know, many, many years, and he said, do you think it'd be a good turnout for the funeral? I said, I should bloody well think so. Yes, of course there will be, because he bumped into lots of people, and you never forgot him. You know, once you'd met him, he could be a right pain in the rear end, I promise you. Like everybody, nobody's this perfect example. He was no Mother Teresa. Good God in heaven, I could tell you stories about him, blow your mind. You wouldn't believe it. But it's because the difference was there were those people who worked with him and there were those people that knew him. You know, and when I say knew him. They knew him away from that. I knew him before he was well known. Although in his own mind, he was always famous. I met him at the age of 18. You know, when he was huge, he was absolutely enormous. But the weight didn't seem to bother him. It's only when he became famous, and he tried for ages to be famous. He really wanted to be famous, and he tried various things, and he was just getting deeper and deeper in debt because, unfortunately, the one thing that Dale liked doing was spending money. He liked being seen to spend money. He liked going out and spending money. He didn't want people to think he didn't have any money. And as I say, I've got a million and one stories. You know, I feature in his autobiography. I was on his This Is Your Life because I knew him better than anybody. In fact, when we were at Channel 5, Channel 5 were doing This Is Your Life. They were making it. And they came to me and they said, we'd like to do Dale. And so we sat down. We went through the people that he'd like to see on there. And some people were on there he didn't want to see on there. And that's why it's so sort of difficult to talk about somebody. And I said to Chris, the producer, I said, you know, I feel happy for him that he's in a place now where he's probably going to be, you know, he can be eternally young. It doesn't matter. He's not going to age anymore, which he didn't like. He hated the ageing process. Bloody well hated it. He really did. He had problems. He had medical problems. He had emotional problems. He had insecurity. Everybody's got all these problems. You've all got them. But if you're in the business, it kind of gets amplified. And a job came up, and it was for a show's supermarket sweep. And bearing in mind, he'd been a very successful DJ. He'd been with me at United Biscuits Network, UBN, which if you read his autobiography, you'll know all about. That's where a lot of people started, the Roger Scotts, the Nicky Horns, the Graham Deans, the Adrian Loves. Everybody started there, and then people went on to commercial radio. And I'd met him in a disco in Richmond. He was my relief DJ, and he'd come down. I looked at this big fat queen, and I thought, well, you're not going to be much bloody good. And he was working. He had a residency up in Tottenham at a place called Charlie Brown's. And people who followed him, because in those days, DJs could get followings. He had a crowd. And when I said, listen, I'm going to take a short break, coming up next, Dale Winton. And there was a huge cheer. And I suddenly realised that he was actually... And he brought in a little box of records. Me, I brought in, like, you know, a complete shop. He brought in a little box of records because he knew what was going to get everybody going. And he wiped the floor with me completely. But we became really good friends. Really good friends. Almost immediately. Almost immediately. You know, we didn't need to sort of wait for a few weeks. It was on that evening that the friendship was forged way back in the early 70s. And we would go out, when we finished, we'd go up to the airport and we'd spend our ill-gotten gains. Because we only used to earn about £8 a night. Well, that's what I was on. He might have been on more. And we'd go and get a club sandwich at sort of 1 o'clock in the morning. And that was our idea of fun. He had a car. I didn't have a car. He had this flash car. And I remember thinking, bloody hell, you must be really rich. You must be really rich. And he had this car and he just behaved in such a way. He was very flamboyant, even more flamboyant than he became when he was on Supermarket Sweep, but only after Series 2. And so anyway, to cut a long story short, there was lots of water in the meantime. We had a lot of mutual friends, you know, and over the years, you know, we've had highs, lows, troughs, deep depressions, happiness. I've got most of the suits from Supermarket Sweep. Because he didn't want to keep them anymore, so I've got the blooming things. I've got shirts, I've got everything. They don't fit me either, but I've still got this stuff. And he went along for this show called Supermarket Sweep. And he knew the show because he'd done his research, and he knew what the show was. He was living in rented accommodation, and he goes in there. And bearing in mind, he's very overweight. He's very confident in his own way. As I say, once you met him, you wouldn't ever forget meeting him. Because he had that sort of personality. And, God, this is difficult. And he goes in for this meeting, and he's got people there, and he goes in, and they sort of look at him, and they sort of decide all the rest of it. And in the end, after he'd had this little interview for Supermarket Sweep, they went, well, thank you very much indeed for coming in to see us. And he said to me, he said, I knew I hadn't got it. He said, I knew I hadn't got it. He said, so I thought, I've got nothing to lose. He said, so, he said, I stood up. He said, I said, thank you very much indeed. Listen, he said, I'll tell you a few things. He said, you need me for this show. He said, you need me. He said, you'll find Lord Lucan before you find a better presenter for this show. Because they didn't want him. I think they wanted Keith Chegwin. Keith Chegwin was like top of their list. And he said, we're sick to death of seeing the same people on television. We're sick to death of seeing, you know, all the people that we've seen time and time again. He said, I need this job. He said, I'll turn it round for you. He said, thank you. And he turned round and he walked out of the room. And they looked at each other, apparently, and they went, let's give it to him. So they gave him Supermarket Sweep. Now, bearing in mind, in the interim period, I'd been working out in Vienna at Blue Danube Radio for the ORF, the Austrian Broadcasting Corporation, roughly equivalent to the BBC over here. Austria's equivalent was the ORF. And he'd said to me before, he said, can you get me, you know, a job out there? He said, because it was a 3-week contract and I'd love to do it and I need the money. So I said, OK. So I had a word with the lady who ran it, Telia, and she booked him to go out there. And he went out there. And he did a few contracts. Unfortunately, he then cancelled a contract because something else came up in his life, like he couldn't really be bothered. And so he didn't go. And she said to me, I hope he's not going to be like this. Anyway, blow me down. He was due to go on the Sunday out to Blue Danube Radio because the contract started Monday all the way through for 21 days. And he got Supermarket Sweep and he cancelled. At like less than 24 hours notice. She went up the wall, as you can imagine. She was not happy. But he'd got this other job, and he does the first series of Supermarket Sweep, and he plays it straight. You know, how much is a tin of peas? Is it 24 pence? Is it 36? So and so. And he played it, and it was a bit bland. It was a bit wooden. And he said to them, he said, listen, you know, can I do it my way? And they went, yeah, OK. So it then became very camp, and it then became very Dale, and he was able to get away with it. And with the success came the money. With the money came the car. He loved his cars. With that came a place in America. He bought a house in Regent's Park, and he became the hot property. Everybody wanted to work with Dale. They put him on all sorts of things. And as I say, he was on the up. Probably in the 90s, I would think, would be his sort of best period. And he loved it. He revelled in it. He loved going out. He loved seeing people. I remember going out. We would go out in the car every Friday night, every Friday, sometimes Saturday as well. He'd go, Steve, where are we eating tonight? And I'd go, oh, I don't know. And we'd either eat in Ballons or we'd eat in various places. We'd go off to clubs or something like that. And he loved it. He absolutely loved it. He loved the fame bit. The trouble is, when he was doing the National Lottery at the BBC, He didn't want to take his makeup off because he thought he looked good in it. So he'd go out on the... So we'd end up going out, you know, to a club or something with him in full makeup. Which, of course, if you've ever seen full makeup for television, sometimes it can be quite heavy. It's a little bit different now. And he did the lottery. I'd go down there and sort of watch the lottery and then we'd toodle off afterwards. And life was great. The one thing that he didn't have was a boyfriend. The one thing that he wanted was a boyfriend, but it's very difficult when you've lived by yourself for a long time. The one thing that Dale couldn't do is handle people telling him what to do. He didn't handle that very well. He would be the first to admit that there was always, you know, that problem with sort of boyfriends thinking that they could control him, whereas in fact they couldn't. He didn't come out until he was about 54. It was a bit sort of H from Steps, you know, big surprise to everybody. Good heavens above, he's gay. And so he had been out with a few people, but they never lasted very long because the sort of people he wanted to go out with tended to be heterosexual, which kind of proved a little bit of a problem. And so he did have relationships with sort of a few people. As I say, you could do a book on Dale's love life and it would have the word at the end of each chapter, unfulfilled, because he wanted to. I think he wanted to sort of take somebody out and show them off. But, you know, the people that he was going for didn't want to be taken out and shown off. So it was always a bit disappointing. So his love life was slightly turbulent. His TV career was, I always described it as being a bit Kenneth Williams. Kenneth Williams was terribly. And yet the films he did were a little bit down market. They weren't the sort of, you know, you think he'd be doing Shakespeare and stuff like that. He did play the Dauphin once in a movie. And Dale, of course, saw himself as, you know, as sort of a... He used to say to me, I'm a BBC player, you know, which sort of meant that... And then he went and did something for another channel. And immediately the ball changes. Immediately the goalposts move. And he did Touch the Truck. He did that dreadful Hole in the Wall programme, which even I hated. And we'd sit down and watch, because at the end of each lottery, the whole team used to have to sit in a room, everybody who'd been on the show and all the cameramen, and watch the show back at the end of it. I used to think, biggest waste of space ever. I couldn't wait to get out. But we had to sit down and watch the programme, and they'd all make comments on, we could do that, this camera angle was that, and this was, you know. It's like analysing a radio programme, as far as I'm concerned. You can analyse a radio programme, but you can't change it because each programme is different. I didn't think yesterday when I finished doing the programme that I'd start this programme getting choked up over a friend of mine who... And I don't know the cause of death. I don't know the cause of death. I don't know, you know, what happened. His mother took her own life some years ago when he was 20. He just passed 21 and we were due to be going out for the night. And he would come round and collect me. And I got a phone call from a mutual friend of ours saying that Dale can't make it tonight. I'll call you later. And it was then that I realised that something had gone wrong, because you get a feeling. And it's so funny, because when I woke up this morning and I had all these messages on there, I'd only been talking about this, and we'd spoken about it. Dale and I had spoken about it a while ago, about, you know, this sort of ageing process, which he didn't like. He didn't like the illness. He was a smoker up until the end, I think. If that wouldn't surprise, I think he's a bit like Barbara Bush. She was drinking bourbon, apparently, up until the end. And he would have, you know, it would have been the mirror cracked for Dale. It would have been that kind of thing. So I don't know what happens. No doubt there will be an autopsy, and no doubt we will then hear the full story. Either way, he really enjoyed his life. He had his godchildren, which he loved. But on the subject of his mother, it was only later that I found out that she'd taken her own life. And he never changed her bedroom in their little house in Hatch End, and it was the smallest house in the road. He never changed that bedroom to the day he moved out. He rented the house out, but that bedroom stayed as it was. It had all her clothes in the wardrobe. It was almost as if he couldn't bear to do it. And I went round to the house on numerous occasions, and met Dale's mother. On those odd occasions, she was sort of, she was lucid and able to talk about things. But, you know, when I think about it now, and when, you know, I've got all these lovely people sort of writing to, I mean, people that I haven't heard of for quite some time, you know, it's really, it's that makes me sort of sort of go under a little bit, because it's, you know, it's sort of, it's really odd, isn't it? You can go to a funeral and you're doing really fine, and then somebody will say something like, they were really lovely and they loved you and all that kind of, and you start thinking, oh God, and that's when I go to pieces. So my friend Jackie, she says, I just walked home across Regent's Park this evening and remembered the good times and the laughs we had. And she said, I've just come out of the restaurant to hear the news. And that's, you know, it's like, where would you have been when you heard the news that Dale had died? Because 62 is nothing. Nothing, is it? Absolutely nothing at all. I mean, God, we used to joke about the fact that we'd end up our days sitting on a veranda in Florida, rocking backwards and forwards, being old and grumpy. I said, we don't need to wait to be old and grumpy, Dale. We are old and grumpy. You know, we could both be sort of bitter. I feel that he's in a better place now. I feel that he's in somewhere where, you know, he doesn't have to worry about getting old. He doesn't have to worry about not having somebody. Because, you know, the amount of affection that's coming out of people is really touching. And he would be so thrilled. He'd be so thrilled that people sort of remembered him, because he had a period away from television where, you know, I mean, he'd made some, don't get me wrong, he made some money. Must have done. He lived in a very swish house in Regent's Park. He had some very nice cars. You know, he took his holidays. He had a nice holiday home. But he became more reclusive. The older he got, he was happier. He didn't like dinner parties. He didn't like being trapped in a place. I don't think he ever, as far as I can remember, ever gave a dinner party at home. I don't think it was possible. The dining room table was covered with paperwork. Paperwork and packets of fags. Stuyvesant Gold he bought. That's what he smoked, Stuyvesant Gold. He'd go abroad and he'd buy stuff like that. But he was addicted. When he was trying to diet, he was addicted to Tenuate Dospan. He would try and find places. He always used to have Ventolin inhalers, but he hadn't had an asthma attack since he was about 15. Everybody's got stories about him, but the only people that can tell the stories are those people, you know, who'd been with him, not anything to do with his television career or his radio career, because he very much modelled himself on Tony Blackburn. He loved that sort of sensational kind of thing. That was very much in sort of the Dale mould. But I think behind the painted smile, I think there was somebody who really strove for something else that was unattainable for him. We'll take a short break. Back after this.
This is LBC. Steve Allen. Tweet at LBC.
Odd, isn't it? When you talk about the passing of somebody, when you talk about somebody that you know so well, I mean so well, I could write a book about Dale, you know, the moments that we had. At one point, we lived together. At one point, it was a complete disaster, I have to tell you, which is because the clash of egos was so appalling, but it doesn't matter. Scott the cabbie says that Supermarket Sweep would only work with Dale presenting. He was the perfect for that role, part of my growing up. He said, I often message you asking how he was. We have seen him on TV for a good while. He was in his own world, I think, for a lot of the time. Michael says, very sad, very tough for you. Only tough at the beginning of the programme, I'm afraid, where I thought, I'm not going to get through this. Because it is strange. I mean, it really is strange. I've spoken about him 3 million times on the programme over the years. He's been on the programme. He came on Five's Company, turned up at some of my live gigs as well at the Fairfield Halls in Croydon. People will remember that. But, you know, to actually talk about somebody who isn't there anymore, And he'd hate the idea that there'd be an autopsy. He would really not like that at all. That's not his sort of thing. But one here from who was this one? Oh, yes, Michael, who says, I picked Dale up in my cab once. He says, you can imagine the look on his face when I said, how wonderful to meet a friend of Steve Allen's. He was always quite surprised at that, actually. He'd say to me, people know you, Steve. I used to say, I know. And Zach says, I had the accidental random pleasure of receiving a kiss from him whilst attending London's Astoria nightclub. Lovely man. Yeah, 1955, 2018. And Paul says, Telia and the old Blue Danube crowd will be very sad to hear about Dale. I only met him once and he was as sweet as everybody said he was, thinking of you. Thank you so much. It's that that actually affects me more than anything. And you don't really want it to at all. But Michael, a friend of mine, because sometimes you tell people that you work with some of the other stories, the other Dale Winton stories, which I can't repeat on this programme. I'd love to tell you the stories, but I can't. Because you just do it out of a sense of loyalty, because I've got a sneaking feeling he's sitting on a cloud watching me up there going, Steve. And I'll be going, oh, God, I'm in trouble now. I get that all over the place. Every time there'll be something happening. People, one of my bosses this morning, sent me a text saying, are you all right? And I went, yeah, I am all right, actually. I am all right. I just get a bit emotional at times about things. And it's a shame, really. Because I don't mean to, but I can't help it. You know, if you've known somebody for that amount of time. You know when people talk about, you know, the Cilla thing and all the rest. He never went to Cilla's funeral. He never went. He didn't do any interviews on it at all. I think he was doing his own thing. I think he sort of, I don't know whether or not he thought it was superstitious. I think most of the things he thought were superstitious in his life. But as I say, he could be the most generous person. We go out for dinner. I don't think I ever paid. I can't remember paying. I'm sure I must have done at some point. But he would be incredibly generous. And then he could be, as I say, you know, really terrible at times. Ask anybody who knows him. Not necessarily people who work with him, but he did what he wanted to do. I can remember once, I'll tell you the story, because a friend of mine used to be on LBC called Jeremy, has an agency that books people for after dinner speaking. And he tried to get Dale to do a thing. It was a conference, I think in Birmingham or Manchester or anything else. And he'd offered him what I thought was a substantial amount of money. I think it was £10,000. I remember thinking I'd bite somebody's hand off for £10,000. And Jeremy phoned me and he said, could you have a word with Dale? He said, I know you've got influence with him. I said, well, so. But and he said, I want him to do this gig. He said, see what sort of money he wants. And so I spoke to him. I didn't just phone him up and go, why are you not doing this gig? I said, are you mad? I said, this is going to take an hour and a half of your time and they're going to send a car for you and bring you back again. There's no, and you're going to get this much money. I said, what sort of money do you want? He said, I don't think it's enough. I said, what, £10,000? Eventually, it went up to £25,000. Now, you might think this is a lot of money, but I promise you, there are people, you know, in the entertainment industry who can command these sort of fees quite easily. It's not difficult to get £25,000. So he did it, and he said afterwards, he said, well, I ended up with another load of bloody suits from Supermarket Sweep. Every time I recommend it, it's like the Royal Variety Performance. I don't want to do it. I said, yeah, of course, it's the Royal Variety Performance. Oh, Steve, what do I want to do that for? I said, do it. God in heaven, honestly, you should grasp these opportunities. Meanwhile, Davina McCall was working every gig that God sent, whereas Dale, he wasn't that bothered because the gigs paid so well. He didn't need the money. You know, it's a case of you don't need that. I've done that before. Somebody said, I want you to do that. I've gone, I don't need the money. I'd rather not do it. I'd rather rest. I've got to that time where I need to rest. And now, with his passing, I'm even more nervous about, you know, everyday work and living and life and all the rest of it. But That having been said, he was somebody who did enjoy the work. He enjoyed the public more than I think he enjoyed the work. He knew how to do it. It wasn't common. He never used auto cue. He hated auto cue, and he never used an earpiece. Now in television, people use earpieces all the time, and he never used one. He didn't want to, but he would go everywhere with his makeup artist, even when he came to join us in Croydon. When I did the Fairfield Halls down there, he brought his own makeup artist. Every time he did GMTV and all these other programmes, he took his own makeup artist. He wanted them to sort of to get the work. And that's why I sit here thinking, I feel like I'm in some sort of ethereal dream. I feel as though I'm talking about something and somebody that I've spoken about a million times before on this subject, you know, and with him. We talked about, you know, how long we were going to live and what we were going to do. And he did better than me, but I didn't. It never bothered me. That didn't come into it. There was never any rivalry. He'd just say to me, oh, I bumped into so-and-so, they love your show. And I used to say, thank you. Because I was always grateful that people listen to the radio. You know, you can flip round the radio at the moment, probably this morning, and you'll have people maybe talking about Dale or playing music or whatever, and they won't know what he was like. They won't know what he went through. They won't know, you know, after his mother died. We went out more after his mother died, but he never became teary. He was very proud of his mother. She was, you know, she was a busty blonde. She only turned up to one of our United Biscuits Network lunches, or it was a dinner, actually, and the door opened and it was like a movie. A spotlight fell on the door and she walked in swathed in white fur. I mean, and we all sat there. We were eating curry and our jaw was on the floor and Dale said, this is my mother. And we all went, huh? You couldn't quite believe it. If you look at a picture of her online, Sherry Winton, you'll know she was very glam. She was very, very glam. In the days when, you know, glam was actually glam. Noreen, Brian and the gang. Love the photo of me with shoulder-length hair with him. I think in the book I've got my shirt off. I know. Not anymore, ladies and gentlemen. Not anymore. Sam. Hi, Sam. He says, I remember it must have been about 4 years ago when I was producing your show. Very loosely using the word producing. He says, Dale called you up at about 3 a.m. in the morning and you answered. I think it was the first time you'd spoken in a while, but glad you did speak. Yes, you remember that? God, I remember that. We had our fallings out. I won't deny it. We had one, but I can't tell you about it. People I know about it, but I can't tell you because it betrays the confidence of somebody else. But you're right, actually. He phoned and I think it was, I'd sent him a message saying a friend of ours had died. And because Dale at one point went out, I could tell you now because they're both not here anymore. He went out with this guy called John Holly. John Holly was gay, also worked as a DJ, and him and Dale struck up a friendship, which developed into a relationship. But unfortunately, because they were both slightly volatile, sometimes they would have extreme blow-ups. And on this particular day, they were flying off on holiday to Spain. So they both dutifully turn up at the airport, Dale with his mother, and John with his parents, and they weren't talking. They spent the whole time waiting for the aeroplane and then sitting on the aeroplane over to Spain, not saying a word. And you know what happens? Somebody's got to break the ice. Somebody's got to pick up that phone if ever you have an argument. And so it was me, and I would have to phone him up on occasions and go, so-and-so's passed away, you know, mutual friends of ours. And he'd go, oh, I can't believe it. And I think that kind of preyed on him because he didn't have much of a social life, not much of a social life after he'd sort of stopped doing a bit of television. And I think he then became isolated. I think he then became that recluse. He liked being a recluse. My friend Carl, strangely enough, Carl, who's up at Sky, we were talking about you the other day. He says, I'm on a very, very early shift. He said, lovely tribute. Hope you're doing well following the news. Someone may have already asked you from Sky. No. Do you know, it's funny, I don't want to talk about it. I know I'm talking about it now, but I don't want to turn into some sort of media thing where people phone you up and say, can you do it? I'm going to be with Nick Ferrari this morning, but that's it, because I've got my memories of him. I'm just waiting to see what happens at the autopsy. I should probably speak to his agent, Jan, a little bit later on. I just think it's really bizarre. The more bizarre it is, because we've spoken about it on so many occasions where I've always said he's not going to make it to old age. He doesn't do old age. He never liked old age. He tried giving up smoking. I think he discovered booze, which might have changed his life a little bit. But he could be, as I say, very difficult. He could be, you know, unbelievably stubborn and late. I can't begin to... Oh, I've missed the news. Talking of late, actually, I'll have to come back to the late... I can't believe I'm so late. I'm so sorry. LBC News Time, 4:30-ish, with the headlines. John Stratford.
Figures from the world of entertainment have been paying tributes to TV presenter Dale Winton, who's died aged 62. His agent says he passed away at home, but hasn't revealed any further details. Ministers are being warned the number of...
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Steve Allen.
Morning, everybody. Nice to have your company. 25 minutes. I'm going to sneeze now. Here we go. Oh, well, stops me crying, I suppose. If you have just woken up, you've probably missed the news that Dale Winton has died. He died yesterday at the age of 62. And I was talking about Carl the other day. Carl used to be with us at LBC. There's always lots of jokes about me and Carl and shoes, and we leave it at that. You'll have to sort of make up your own stories. But we were talking about him the other day because Caroline went out for a drink or three because Carl's getting married. Well, that's what he thinks. And it's in September. And you know when they read the bans out, Carl, and somebody, they say, if any of you have any cause or just impediment why these two should not be lawfully joined together, that's when I stand up at the back of the church and start singing, It Should Have Been Me. OK, that'll be the one. The last time we saw each other, would it have been at the Hampton Court Food and Drink Festival, which I've been to a few times, actually. It's really good. But it's nice to know that you also have to sometimes get up in the early hours of the morning and go to work. It's quite pleasing, actually, isn't it, at this time? I have been up to Sky. I have been up there. I went up with my friend Paul, and he's huge. Seriously, I thought Global was big. My goodness me. Steve, Paul, over in good old Veen. Why is your phone coming up Spain? Are you in Spain on holiday at the moment? We couldn't work it out. Normally it comes up sort of British iPhone or something like that. Yours comes up with a Spanish supplier. What's going on, eh, Paul? Tell me. My mum says, Vin, adored Dale and was watching any show he's on. They're still showing Supermarket Sweeps on the television. And says, no doubt you'll miss your long time pal. Well, 50 years nearly is a very long time. It is a very long time. And you don't realise. You know, you hear other people. But his timekeeping, that's what I was talking about, the timekeeping. It was terrible. It was the worst ever. You know, if somebody said you need to be somewhere by 7, the chances are you'd never make it till 9 o'clock. We used to miss planes. Seriously, I'd be phoning him going, because he'd say, I'll come and collect you. And he had a driver if he was going up to the airport, saved him worrying about doing, you know, valet parking. And he said, I'll come and collect you. So I think the flight was something like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So I thought maybe at 11 I'd check where he was. Are you all right? Yes, just leaving. So I just think, oh, that's good. But of course, that was all fibs, terrible. And on this particular occasion, we were going off to... Where were we going to? I think we were going to Gran Canaria. We had a holiday booked for 2 days to Gran Canaria. It was just, let's go to Gran Canaria, 2 days, it'll be fine. Anyway, 11:30, I phone him. Yep, on our way. Okay, good. I just think, not too sure about that. It didn't sound like he was in the car. 11:45, I phoned. Where are you? Oh, leaving soon. Leaving? What do you mean leaving soon? He lives in Regent's Park. I'm in Twickenham. What do you mean you're leaving soon? And he hadn't left home. And he said, don't worry. So we get to the airport. So we're late. We go rushing up to the desk. Well, I say rushing, as rushing as we could be. And he said to him, I booked him for the flight, Dale, and all the rest of it. She said, well, it's taxiing out. He said, could we not get it? She went, no. So we had to phone John Warrington, who'd booked the seats for us, and he had to rearrange things. We had to go to another terminal. Anyway, it was via Barcelona. Bearing in mind, we're supposed to be going to Gran Canaria. So we get to Barcelona and there's no connecting flight so we had to stay a night in Barcelona. Unfortunately, it was fiesta time in Barcelona. So there we are at the airport. The luggage had been checked onto the morning flight to Gran Canaria. We are now stuck in this godforsaken bloody hellhole. And he said, don't worry, I shall charter a plane. And so, okay, anyway, he couldn't charter a plane. So he said, Steve, we'll book into a hotel. Well, of course, as it's fiesta time, there's no chance of booking into a hotel. They're all blooming booked until eventually we find one. So we get a taxi, we get there, and what's going on in the hotel? A wedding. There is the mother of all weddings. There's people and people dancing through the corridor. I'm thinking, this is my hell. I've got no clean pants. Now, you might not worry about things like this, but when you get to a hotel, you've had all day travelling, you want to have a shower and put on clean clothes. We didn't have any clean clothes. They were in the suitcase at the blooming airport. And then he wanted to eat. Then he wants to eat. But unfortunately, nothing was ever straightforward with Dale when it came to eating. So we would have the person... It was a rigmarole we went through. I kind of learnt to sort of take Mogadon during it because it could take for ages. So we go... We're the only two in the restaurant. There's all the tables and chairs stacked up in the corner and there's us sitting in the middle. Like two sad old people. Anyway, so... I think, what do you fancy, Steve? I really don't care. I really don't mind. And so I think I'll have the sausages. So It's never straight. You'd think that would be it, wouldn't you? Sausages, mashed potato, a bit of gravy, a bit of onion, perhaps some carrots or something. No, no. So we order it, and I by this time I'm downing wine like there's no tomorrow. I'm my own Trevi Fountain. And I'm chucking this wine down, thinking, I'm really hating you quite a lot. And he had the other annoying habit, which was his phone would ring, and he'd look at it and go, who's that? And so he'd answer it. I'd say, don't answer the phone, we're on holiday. And he'd go, hi. And you'd think, don't answer the blooming phone. Anyway, he then changed his mind about the sausages, because he's seen something else on the menu. So are the sausages grilled? Oh, fried. Oh, right. Cancel the sausages. And so we then go, he could change it three times. You could be sitting there. Or if you were in a restaurant with other people, he would sit there and he'd order it. And then he'd look around. And then he'd see something arriving at another table. And he'd go to the waiter, what are they having over there? And if there was something that arrived next to us, he'd be leaning over and starting a conversation with somebody and saying, what are you having? And then the worst thing was, if you're well known on television, it probably happens to a few of you listening at the moment, you sit in a restaurant and if there's other chairs at your table which are empty, somebody will just come over and sit down. And we had this in balance. Somebody came over whilst we're eating and just sat down and started talking to him. And so I'm sitting there and I think that's the height of rudeness. So I said, excuse me, I'm another human being on the table. You know, and Dale said afterwards, he said, Steve, that was very rude. I said, he was very rude. We're sitting, I mean, there are stories and there are stories and there are stories. But at the end of the day, 62 is way too young. But as I say, and I said at the beginning of the programme, he's now in a peaceful place. He's in a peaceful place where happiness reigns all the way through. It's flowers. He lived in perpetual mess. He had a cleaner, two cleaners coming in. But to be honest with you, every time I went round there, it looked even worse than the last time. There'd be clothes all over the place, hundreds and hundreds of cigarettes. And a house in Florida was no better either. But he achieved what he wanted to, but he did worry. He worried about the end and whether or not people would remember him. I think they're going to remember him. I think people have good images. I mean, even though Supermarket Sweep was, you know, one of those cheap daytime programmes, people loved it because you could play along with it. You know, you'd be shouting at the television. Never got me a job anywhere, but it doesn't matter. You know, it's the same sort of thing. But Stacey said, sad to hear about him. He came across as a lovely man. Well, he was. People loved him. He just didn't have that special bit of happiness that people, you know, should have. If you're successful, you would think you have success, you have money, and then you have somebody to share it with. You know, hopefully somebody who's working. You know, that's the big problem, that you don't want to... But it's very easy to attract people, as indeed Dale did. You know, people who could be hanger-oners, you know, and I'd say to him, I don't like them. He'd go, Steve, they're really nice. And I go, I don't... And then, of course, it would turn out that I'd be right. And he'd go, yeah. I mean, he did get ripped off on a few occasions. But, as I say, that was part and parcel of him. He used to love going to the Ivy. But he'd drop you at a moment's notice if something better came along. You know, many's the time we'd be eating at Ballon's on a Sunday morning having breakfast, and David Walliams would phone, he'd go, I've got to go, Steve. And he'd go, oh, OK. Shopping another time, maybe. Another one here, and this is Jason in Milton Keynes. He says, feel for you and his family. To be honest with you, I don't think he had many family. There were a couple of people up in Sheffield, I remember, but that was about it. I don't remember him coming from a big family at all. But it's a shame. I used to bump into him in Covent Garden or Soho. We'd flirt, says Duncan. Oh, we flirted with everybody. He was absolutely the world's worst flirt. He seriously was. He'd sit down and he'd say, he's nice over there. He always, as I say, he went for completely the wrong people. He would go for people who were more impressed with the fact that he was Dale Winton and he was on the television than people were actually interested in having a deep and meaningful relationship, of which I don't think... And, you know, you might have to check with other friends of his, but having known him for, you know, the best part of nearly 50 years, I think I knew him pretty well, pretty well. And I just don't think he was... He wanted the relationship, but I don't think he knew how to do it. And the reason he didn't is because he was wrapped up with all his other things, you know. And, I mean, his idea of fun would be sitting on the computer or listening to Dusty Springfield records. He knew everything about music. He was big into music. He used to work for HMV in Oxford Street, and he knew his music. He really did know his music, and he'd be a big collector of music. So in America, of course, it was the ideal place. Not only did it have all the shops selling DVDs of all the old films that he loved, but it had all the old music that he loved, and a lot of the old groups, of which Noreen will remember, and Brian, who is still touring, he could go and see them over there as well. They'd be touring Tampa down the road. You'd have a stadium with, you know, Gary Puckett minus the Union Gap, or, you know, different people. And he loved that kind of thing. I mean, he really did. And he had a bicycle, and he would go out there and he'd bump into a few Brits and people like that. And then, of course, he came back with that show, Dale Winton and Florida, which actually wasn't a great show. But then they had that disaster of the shooting, so the show got pulled. And I don't think they'll show it. But on, I think on Challenge, I think they are still showing his supermarket sweeps, of which they seem to make loads and loads and loads and loads of. And I went up to watch it one time, up in Nottingham, filmed. And it was freezing cold up there, freezing cold. You'd sit in the studio because he used to sweat profusely because of medication that he was on. He'd take all sorts of things. If somebody sort of said, this is the latest, he didn't used to call them sort of speedy tablets. He called them fat busters and fat burners and stuff like that. It was any excuse. It still didn't stop him eating. And at the end, he'd always have to have a piece of chocolate. He loved his chocolate. He loved his food, full stop. He loved showbiz. He loved the gossip. He loved doing it. And he loved the fact that he was Dale. And he didn't like the fact that sometimes he couldn't do it, or maybe there wasn't the work there. And so that's why I want to know what happened to him at the end. Because, you know, I don't know. Sarah says, way too soon to go. Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. One here says, as a Charlie Brown's regular back in the 70s, I remember Dale as a fantastic DJ. Yes, I mean, he had Charlie Brown sewn up. I went up there a few times, actually. I would finish doing my gig in Richmond, and how I found it, I'll never know, but I found Charlie Brown's in Tottenham, and you walked in the door and the DJ box was on the left-hand side, and he danced as well. And in fact, if you get his autobiography, you'll get that great picture of Steve Allen with his shirt off. If you really, really want to cure any sort of illnesses you've got, that'd be the picture to look at. Let's try and hit some time, shall we, this morning? 12 minutes to five.
Nick Ferrari, Steve Allen on LBC. Text 84850.
Morning, everybody. 9 minutes to five, if you've just woken up. I'm sorry that the first part of the programme is completely different, mainly because, you know, you have to talk about Dale Winton, mainly because I knew him for longer than just about anybody else. I don't think anybody knew him for as long as I did. We met when he was 18 and about 26 stone. He was huge. But he was the one who basically we met in this discotheque, God, now they call them clubs. Ours was a discotheque. The DJ spoke, hi, all that kind of stuff. And down in Richmond, and he was my relief DJ. He lived in Hatch End with his mother, who spent most of her time in bed, asleep. And they had a little house. Rest of the road, big houses, there's little house, but, you know, always nice. They had a gardener and a cleaner, although he used to tidy up before the cleaner arrived. And the gardener came round and used to cut all his flowers down in the garden and take them home. I said, where are the flowers gone? He said, oh, I let the gardener take them. I said, what's the point of having a gardener? He's growing stuff here for himself. But you couldn't tell him. He did what he wanted to do, and now he's dead at the age of 62. And I'm not surprised. I'm just surprised. Because I didn't think I'd ever be sitting here saying that he died at 62 and he's on the front pages of the papers, because I knew him so well. I knew his insecurities. I knew his best bits. I knew his low bits. You know, I knew his generosity. Anybody tell you about that? He was always very generous. He loved his godchildren and Mark and the family. And but who the rest of his family were, I've got no idea. We seem to be sort of kept apart. Noreen says, a friend and I went to Selfridges to a personal shopper to get my wedding outfit. Dale was in there recording a TV Christmas show. My friend said, don't turn round. Dale Winton's over there. So like Twizzle, I turned round. He was surrounded by TV people, but he gave us a lovely smile. She said, you're doing great. Yeah, I've had a couple of moments where it just sort of gets on top of me, I'm afraid. Jackie in Feltham says, I met Dale in Oxford Street many years ago. He was very kind and chatted to me and my friend for ages. 62, no age. Lovely tribute. Thank you. I hope so. I don't want it to sound mawkish. I don't want it to sound over the top. I want it to sound heartfelt. You know, from somebody who sort of knew somebody. You know, he was sort of my sort of early growing up. If he hadn't, you know, met me in that discotheque in Richmond and then put in a good word up at United Biscuits Network, I wouldn't be doing this programme today, because it was as a result of doing that and then a few other people along the way who gave me that little push that gave me a job at LBC back in 1979. By which time, I think Dale was, he was at Radio Trent in Nottingham, but he'd come down at the weekend. I remember we actually, he came down, he said, quick, get in the car. I said, why? He said, I've got to go and interview Cilla Black. I went, ooh, Cilla Black. And she was at the Wimbledon Theatre, so he pootled over Wimbledon Theatre in his car, breaking every speed limit. And we get there, and it was about 20 minutes to curtain, and Bobby, her husband, went, no, it's too short now, she can't do it now. So we'd had this terrible wasted journey. But he used to come down to London and interview celebrities and then go back and play it on his programme on Radio Trent, which I think we own now, but it's been rebranded. I did go to it. Is it part of the Capital Network? Look at me being in radio and telling you things like that. I don't know these things at all. He was definitely a household name. Saw him a couple of times, says Mandy, at Scott's restaurant with David Walliams. Didn't look too well last time we saw him, so peace at last. And on a brighter note, we've just purchased our first Bentley. Oh, my goodness. Did think of you when we picked it up, says Matty. Thank you. Depends which one you picked up, I suppose. But yes, I mean, he didn't look so good. I remember speaking to a mutual friend of ours and somebody phoned me and said, he doesn't look very good at the moment. So, but you just hope that at the end it was peaceful and he might have been thinking nice thoughts about how well people were going to be remembering him. It's Wayne the Trolley Dolly. He said, so hard hearing you upset. It's upset me too. Seriously, it really, beginning of the programme, I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. So I've been chatting to Chris, the producer, about it outside. Then all of a sudden it overwhelmed me, I'm afraid, and I got a bit You can imagine how rubbish I am. I was like this on the blooming stage shows, talking about my mother, and she died donkeys years ago. I can't help it. I must be one of those emotional people. Perhaps that's what makes radio appealing. Perhaps that's what makes people listen to people, when you sort of prove to somebody you're actually human. You know, you can cry about somebody's passing. On the other hand, you know, when the hamster passed, I didn't weep one little piece at all, which is very odd. But it says, I can only imagine the two of you out on the town. Oh, you can't. Oh, you can't. I remember at one time we were driving through Soho and he had an open top car, also a bit dangerous if you're well known, and somebody threw themselves on the bonnet of the car and it was paparazzi taking a picture. And of course, imagine how bad that would have looked. You know, a paparazzi of me and Dale in the car, and they'd be going, oh, Dale with, well, who's that? You'd be going, it's Steve Allen. What do you mean, who's that? Person who's known him since the early 1970s. But anyway, fond memories, says Bernie from UBN. Sorry to hear about Dale. Very fond memories from UBN. Very fond memories. My God, when you think how little we earned. 400 quid a month, £100 a week. I thought I'd arrived. £100 a week. He was doing better, but can I tell you? I can't tell you, actually. I really want to tell you. I can drop some hints. Dale used to keep disappearing off at UBN. And it was very interesting because he'd say, oh, I'm just going off. I said, where are you going? He'd go, oh, nowhere. And it went on for ages and ages. And then some years later, I remember saying to him, so where did you go when you kept disappearing off lunchtime? We were based at Austerley, where Sky is at the moment. And he said, I was seeing somebody. I said, I'd like you to keep that quiet. I said, you normally tell me straight away. And it turns out he was seeing a very famous actor. A very famous actor. And I remember years later saying to somebody who worked with this very famous... I've got to be careful on this one. Though it doesn't matter, because the famous actor is no longer with us and Dale's no longer with us. But it was a case of... I remember thinking, I didn't even know this bloke was gay. And he said, well, he wasn't. He was bisexual. But the person who'd worked with him said, we all thought he was a little bit camp. I said, well, he went out with Dale. They went out for a while. He had the oddest choice, the oddest. But you'd laugh if you heard who it is. But I've met him on the show Supermarket Sweep, and I couldn't stop laughing. He's very funny. I loved him. Well, there you go. A lot of people used to say that. I used to love Pets Win Prizes and Supermarket Sweep, says Rob. And somebody says, I used to like listening to him on Pick of the Pops. Yes, he loved 80s music. Oh, he loved his music. He knew his music. I mean, really, really good. sad to hear about Dale. He's been my number one since the start, so I know how much he meant to you, because LBC's been your number one. Big hug, says Nicky and Dorking. And Pablo says, thinking of you now, it's difficult. And Vic Moe says, don't apologise for getting upset over Dale's death. It's only natural. I lost my best friend 4 weeks after I had a brain hemorrhage, and that was in 2006. I still miss her dreadfully. It just sort of overwhelmed me, I'm afraid. I don't know why. I just thought to myself, he'd be going, thanks, Steve. Thanks. You give me a nice sort of chat. I could have told you all sorts of rude stories, but I thought I'd save those for another time. I might do a book. No, of course I won't. Don't be silly. I haven't got the time or the energy. Listen, if he went at 62 and I'm a bit older, not much, but just a little bit older, I don't want you to think, you know, that it's one of those strange situations. But thank you for your texts and emails. I want to change just after 5. I might come back to this a bit later, depending on how kind of emotional I get about the thing. And I'm going to be with Nick Ferrari, I think, at 20 to 8. 20 to 8, honestly. Never done anything at 20. Oh, maybe once. 20 to 8 in the morning. You tend not to do things like that. So we'll take a short break for the news at 5. I'll go and get myself another cup of tea and try and sort of find a tissue somewhere. Sick Britain, the NHS crisis. 22 million people.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Steve Allen.
Oh, thank God that's over with. I know it sounds awful. I know it sounds awful. And I had all intention of being, you know, really big and clever and trying not to sort of be too emotional about it. But it's very difficult, isn't it? It's like sort of coming on. And it's different when it's somebody who you share with a lot of other people. And I've just had, so many texts and emails. Even Stuart at the fish shop, he said, sir, sending you hugs, which is lovely. And Kevin Hughes as well. He said, lovely, lovely personal memories. They can get more personal, Kevin, as you can imagine. My friend Jordan says he loves me, so that's quite nice. It's just difficult. And Ian, over in Florida, he says, I love Tampa. Would have loved to have run into him there. But he says he's heard that Channel 5 are planning to run the Dale Florida show in June. So thanks for that, Ian. I think now, because they're showing supermarkets, I mean, he had some turkeys on that hole in the wall thing was dreadful, dreadful. I could tell you stories about who he hated working with on the show, but it's, now is not the time. Now is not the time. But, I just wanted to sort of pay tribute to him, because if you know somebody for a long time, you just want to, you know, nobody said anything horrid about him. As I say, he could be the biggest pain in the rear end, but at the same time he could be incredibly generous, and he just sort of liked doing it. I just wish that he was happier, you know. Anybody who knew him, and who knew him properly, not just people he worked with, you know, because he was always very nice to people. It was the people that he would sit down with who he'd open his heart up to, and that's when. But I don't think he was very good at doing that. He was not very good. He could wear his heart on his sleeve. God, I said I wasn't going to do this in the next hour. I'm sorry, I've just completely broken my own train of thought. But I just wanted to sort of add my sixpenneth to all the stuff you're going to be reading about today and people who are going to turn up to shows. They'll all claim that they knew him. But unless you'd known him since he was 18, you didn't really know him at all. You just knew, you know, the bit that he showed you. But, you know, he was, oh, God, I could tell you so many stories, but I just didn't get round to them, perhaps on another occasion. So 62, too young, but as I said, when we spoke, he didn't like the ageing process. He hated it. He didn't want to get old, really. He was the mirror cracked. It was that sort of Elizabeth Taylor thing at the end, and he played his final scene, and his final scene was in the house that he loved. I think he loved Florida as well. He loved going over there. He liked cycling. He liked sort of going out. He loved his food. But the problem was he was prone to putting on weight. He spent most of his life yo-yo dieting. You know, and he'd say to me, Steve, do I look fat in this? And I'd say, no, that looks fine. He'd go, are you sure? He'd spend all that time, that insecurity that comes out for anybody, you know, who sort of knows that television makes you put on weight. It's a big problem. But I wasn't surprised when, you know, somebody said to me, he's died. I sort of sat there and I'll tell you exactly what I did. I looked up to the ceiling and I said, are you happy now? Are you happy? That's all I cared about. I wasn't really bothered about anything else. I just wanted to make sure that he was all right. And I said, you happy now? And then I made myself a cup of tea and I felt a bit better. And then I went all stupid at the beginning of the programme, which when you download it or when you stream it back again, you just have to forgive me for that, for being a little bit wussy, I'm afraid. But, you know, that's the way it goes, isn't it? So Meghan and Harry go out the other day holding hands. I don't think she's learnt the traditions of the royal family, but don't do the holding hands, kissy-kissy stuff.